There you go.
All right. Intro. Hello, welcome to the...
You don't need to speak so loud.
Leah, what the heck?
I was reading. Okay, go ahead. Don't yell, though. You don't need to yell.
Okay, take two. Hello, welcome to... I need to yell, because otherwise I won't have the energy.
Can you spend like 10 people?
Okay, but then I can't read.
Okay. Why don't you just stand here?
No, then I'm going to... Wait.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
You're so much trouble.
Okay. Clap. Hello, welcome to the world of Pokemon. My name is Watts. These guys call me guest. And you're listening to Pokemon Rollout, a real play Pokemon Tabletop United RPG podcast. I'm your special host. I think you figured it out. Today is a very special episode because we're going to answer some of your questions that you have been wondering for the past millennial. So together here we have the usual peeps, starting with...
I don't start it.
Oh yeah, who's the one that starts? We can edit this part.
Okay.
I'm Nick, they usually call me the Game Master. No, they don't, but they am the Game Master.
I'm Paul, and I usually play Charlie Manscaped Pine.
No! I'm Michael, I play Professor Rudimentus Bleach for My Brain Sneeze.
I'm Lydia, and I play I'm Not Gonna Go Down That Path. Wait, no. No, shoot, I did that wrong. Wait, okay. I'm Lydia, and I usually play Liliana, I'm Not Gonna Go Down That Path Shadow Garden. There we go.
There you go. Perfect.
Cool. Yeah, so as I mentioned before, I was invited with a very special task today. We are going to ask and probably get answers on the Discord questions that we got throughout this past few weeks, so that's going to be interesting. I hope you like it, and let's get to it.
Also, folks, note that this is a just kind of a mini one. We're going to do a fuller question and answer episode later, but we know you guys have been waiting for some content from us, so we're going to get this little kind of short-ish one. Hopefully, we'll see how it goes. So.
Yes, perfect. Thank you for your patience.
Yes. So, first question comes from Solar Hunt. Here's a fun one for everyone to answer. What has been everyone's most memorable moment being for the campaign?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. That's really hard. That's a great question.
Memorable makes it makes it interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of memorable moments.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we can go back even just all the way to the beginning, and like, I think for me one of the most memorable moments is just when Shmoopy showed up.
Yeah. Episode one, a classic.
Episode one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of iconic ones here as well, and I feel like when I read this question initially, I was like, oh yeah, I have an answer for this, and now, like, 20 minutes later, it's gone. But, I mean, there are several, though, that are like, oh yeah, this one's good, and then this one's good, and this one's good, so...
Yeah, I definitely had an answer to this question, and then Watts read the question.
Exactly.
And it's gone.
And his dulcet tones just wiped it from your memory.
I'll share...
What makes... Question within the question. What makes a memorable moment a memorable moment? Is it because it's funny? Is it because it was cool? What makes it memorable for you guys?
He's making it even harder.
Yeah. So for me, I can kind of. I'd say in general, either one of two things. Either like it's a really. I mean, yeah. Both of those things. Like the episodes where we are riffing off of each other and we are just having fun and being like creative and silly are great. Like, I think I mentioned this in one of our previous ones, but the ruins episode where we have the unknown and we're making all these different words with them. Yeah. And, you know, that was one of the best ones because it was funny and we were all able to be very silly and improvise. But on the flip side, I have some other really cool ones as well. Like, I'll mention these three and then I'll be done. exactly. When Charlie caught the Turtonator in that episode, I thought that was really neat, and I like what Nick has done to like show the consequences of that. And yeah. in tandem with that, being able to then battle the Turtonator leading up to that to the gym, and then when we saw it again in the city, I forget which city was it. It might have been Landsmeet, yeah. I think. And Charlie just like kind of put danger in his place. Like Charlie like owned that situation
yeah.
and is starting to like have that command over over the Turtonator. So
there's a bit of an arc.
Yeah,
just like within.
Yeah, and it's and that arc is still danger. Going. I expect Danger to be part of my team at some point and like actually listen to me and stuff. The other one that I think is really cool was in the fossil tournament. Right, it was a fossil tournament.
Yeah.
The fossil tournament where Nilly was fighting the Aerodactyl and she used counter
yes.
and just like totally obliterated it. Like that was awesome.
That was a clutch moment right there.
So those are the ones that come off the top of my head, but there are a lot of other ones that are just like really, really great too.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say tournament arc is usually the one that comes to top of mind because that one was just, it was laid out so well. There were so many unexpected things that happened, and like Nick is so good with just rolling with the punches and just kind of being like, oh, okay, I guess I'm just going to veer left now. yeah. But he's always really good with dealing with that. And so I think the tournament arc, yeah, that was one of my favorites. And then also when the three of us were split up and
yes.
we were fighting kind of like our own our own nemesis at different points and stuff. So it was kind of cool to like see as like how characters themselves have grown and how they're thinking and working now too, and how they're doing things on their own apart from the group. So there is a lot of fun growth, I think, with that as well.
Yeah,
definitely.
I think thinking of that like kind of veering to one side or rolling with it, I think like the two things come to mind are related to that. The first one is the one time that I just kind of didn't, which was when in Rati you guys were like, we're going to follow Yash now. And I was like, no. I didn't expect that. No. Because I was just like, nope, that just... And it literally was the moment you started saying, I was like, well, this is the completely most obvious choice. I have no plans for this. and so that was there. The other one, which was kind of where I veered left on all of you, was the dream. Or the beach episode.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, what are we doing here? How did this happen? And just kind of dealing with all of that. That was very interesting. It's kind of like a background thing for me where it's like, well, I know what's happening. But I'm also playing a character. Have the person who's running it is deliberately unhelpful to some extent. Which changes things a bit too.
Yeah.
But.
It is a unique dynamic. Mm-hmm. You know, like, as opposed to the way tabletop RPGs typically go, like, yes, the game master is an antagonist to a degree, but is also in the best way a facilitator of the fun. So then to have someone who's just leaning hard into the antagonist side, or even if it's not necessarily antagonistic, just like, I don't care about what fun you want to have, I'm doing my own thing, and you are under... I mean, that's interesting.
Yeah, where it's just a very different feel to it, but
I'll also say too, going off of Paul talking about consequences, basically our entire episode that was about consequences and meeting all of the Pokemon again,
yes,
that we had like stolen children from or like hurt their friends and.
And that's the one that we lost audio from.
I know.
And we had to reconstruct that with Rotom.
Yep.
Which will henceforth be called the Rotom episode, but man.
It's the Rotom episode.
Yeah. Good times. Question mark.
Yes. Question mark.
Cool.
Yeah.
My favorite moment was when I got my debut in the podcast.
Your debut?
Yeah. That was my favorite moment.
It was beautiful.
And then I heard from the comments that I sounded like the monkey from Nickelodeon.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I'm Paul.
You really do though.
Hi, I'm Paul.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's good.
Alright, so next question. Let's jump right into it. Let's roll it in, roll it out, roll it in the table. It comes from Arum Azur. To help pronounce my name, you can say Arum as Arum. Oh,
Arum?
No. Okay,
I think
cool.
It's Arum.
Arum.
I think I used Arum. Okay, yeah. It's not Arum, it's Arum. Arum.
Arum.
Perfect.
Azure.
Alright, so... question. My main question for the cast. After this campaign is done, are there plans to do other campaigns or other TTRPGs? An example, Michael hosting his D&D with pets as full campaign.
This campaign has an ending point?
Right.
I don't think so.
I love how when we were first doing this show, we were like... because it was taking a while to get our first couple of badges. Like, yeah, we've done this for a year, and we only have 2 badges. So 8 years from now, when we have all 8 badges, folks, this yeah. Late November... No, we already hit it, our...
Yeah, November.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. Eight, our anniversary.
It was November.
Yeah. So it's been 8 years, yes? And mm-hmm. We have 5 badges, so you know.
Yep.
So,
we're making progress.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have to defeat the Elite Four.
Exactly. You gotta beat the League, and then you have to do the after League gameplay.
Yeah,
which is like the post game.
Yeah,
we gotta complete our Pokedex.
Exactly, yeah. That's, in fact,
we have to complete our Pokedex.
We're just gonna have like 300 episodes of just Charlie going around catching Pokemon.
Just grinding.
Or yeah. We're all free halfway there.
Or like in the Johto, well, yeah, Johto generation, second gen, a different region opens up for you guys, and then you'll have to go to get another 8 medals, badges, and go defeat another league.
There we go. Back
and maybe a character from the previous season, who knows?
But
Jared.
The return of the arrival.
So I'll speak to this really quickly first. First, I think that we are all right now currently content to continue with this story. Like I like,
absolutely.
Even though it's very, very slow, I think I enjoy the pace that the story is being told, and I like our mini adventures in between. And you know, we really don't have a like goal. Like we have to end our campaign at this point. But when it is over, I think as a cast,
unless Nick has an idea in mind.
I think as a cast, we have to. I think at that point, we have to seriously just talk about just like the entire structure. Like, is there anyone who, like, after doing it for a decade or whatever, is not into it anymore? Do we want to keep doing Pokemon? Do we want to do a different RPG? Do we just want to do the same system with a different GM? I will say that I have an idea I've been sitting on for about as long as we've been doing this podcast, probably a little bit less. It's not well formulated, and I'll just be honest, I don't know if I am in a place where I can pick up the reins as GM. I've never done that for a full campaign before, and it would be a relatively original plan and idea. So I have an idea in mind of what I could do, but also I'll let other people talk.
Well, I also have, like, an idea that I've similarly been sitting on for about as long as we've been going. So, like, again, though, with Pokemon Tabletop United, it's an intimidating system to pick up. After playing and being a player for quite a long time now, I think I could wing it to an extent at some point. I need a couple weeks to prepare, but
just a couple.
I would definitely be leaning on all of the players to help out with it too, though. But I've got an idea.
I would be leaning on
well.
Nick to be the rule encyclopedia that he is, and to help with everything. Again, Nick, like your understanding of the system is ridiculously good, and I applaud you for what you know about it.
Just put together for it, but yeah. I suppose with this one, it would probably be like it would be nice to play a game instead of running one in this context. So that would be interesting to do. If I continued running, there's basically two different systems I would work at. Because in PTU, you're going to play a Pokemon game, which is fine. It's enjoyable. We're doing it, and we're still doing it, and it's fun. But telling different stories, like, there's one system, and they'd be going different actions. There's one system that I know better than PTU that would be interesting to kind of run through. It's got a very different setup. It's more superhero-oriented. And that would be more kind of emergent or like Monster of the Week type of thing would be kind of the storyline that I had for that. And then there's another system that I had forgotten that I kickstarted, and then it showed up at my door about a month ago.
Merry Christmas.
Pretty much. That is the amount of player and like the amount of player buy-in that is needed to make this game work is really high. It's the way I would say I would call it more like a structured improv game than a tabletop RPG, simply because of how it's set up for it. And so I could see that if put into a podcast format, I could see that either I could see that as basically a scripted podcast that is that the script comes from playing the game, keeping good notes or recording it, and then re-scripting it into a more polished performance afterwards.
Interesting.
Simply because that would kind of fit more with the feeling of it. That would allow, like, it's good to have like the comedic moments and things in it, but it's so stylized that you almost want to keep to the style. And while playing it and interacting with it would be fine to kind of break from the style. In a podcast format, you'd almost want to keep it to the style. So that's it's a very different setup, but it's something that I have kicking around as well. But
That's intriguing.
Interesting.
Yes, that one is much more. If you know the SPC Foundation, or not SPC, SCP Foundation. SCP Foundation Control, I believe, is the game that came out. It leans very heavily into that. Just this idea, basically, you are regular everyday office workers, but you also are bonded to or paired with concepts that allow you to break the laws of physics in space-time, and you are all employed by a nebulous, probably at least somewhat evil corporate agency that is sending you out to further capture and contain other anomalies like what you are bonded to.
Interesting.
Okay.
And so it's something where it's like the moment to moment is very funny, but the underarching themes can get a lot more heavy with it, so it's one of those things where it's like, to play with the tonality, you almost want to re-script it. But if you're just playing it for fun, then it's just comedic. But it works better as a one-off, but yeah. It also has a, like, there's definitely Night Vale influence to it as well, but that's...
Sure.
Yeah,
but that's what I'm... That's where I am at the moment.
Got it.
I got nothing.
Cool.
I don't know. I think it would be fun to GM something eventually. I feel like I would need to find something that would be like a very watered down system for me to be able to just pick up quickly. Because like, I'm not someone that when somebody's reading the rules of something that like, oh, okay, I get that. No, I have to like watch it and listen to it and like actually see it playing out in front of me. So
magical kitties.
So the other one I would say I'd like, this isn't my style, but it can work very well. If you've ever heard of Powered by the Apocalypse style games, they're much more rules light, much more systemic. Easy. But
The Avatar game is
Powered by the Apocalypse.
It's a 2D6 system.
All right. Next one.
Cool. So now you know it. Very excited future here in the podcast. All right. Question number 3 from Cobalt Commander with a K.
Number one. Oh, you got two for one. What are your least favorite Pokemons? Let's start with that one.
Anyone that is ugly or boring looking. Uggies and boring type, not my thing.
Get
and by boring type, I don't just mean normal type. I mean ones that are just book normal, like so Klefki.
Complete tangent, Someone made a mod of Pokemon Emerald that's called Pokemon Too Many Types.
Yes.
Where there's a bunch of
I just saw that. Yeah,
so there's boring types, and poor Geodude is a boring, ugly rock type.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Which is just sad.
Geodude's great. Lydia's least favorite Pokemon.
Oh boy.
But okay, no, I'm okay with Geodude.
I have a very quick one on this one. For better or for worse, Flamigo. Flamingo.
It's just a flamingo.
Like just like pink, like literally it's, out it's on someone's like front lawn. Love. Like just out on someone's front lawn, plastic flamingo is not interesting. The head is not like a punching glove. The head is a flamingo's head. Only very slightly stylized, but
I don't usually think about my least favorite Pokemon, but I can tell you it's probably from Gen 5.
Okay.
Like so, like Gen 5, they have high highs, but they also have low lows. Like, scrolling through here. So, low-hanging fruit, you got the monkeys, Pansage, Panseer, Panpour, and then their evolutions are
I forget about them all the time.
Yeah, exactly, and rightly so. Unpheasant is bad, Tranquil's bad, like... not really, like, very competitive.
I kind of like Unpheasant.
And that's fine for you. This isn't your list. Like,
yep, Paul, my list is actually good.
And just like as it looked like, a lot of these are just kind of like, I mean, they're ugly. They're uggos. They're.
I don't mind an ugly Pokemon.
Ducklin and Swanna, they're bad. It's worse, Windmill and Pelipper.
They're cute, so that's where they have their, thing that wins them over for me. They're cute.
I don't mind an ugly Pokemon, if it's an interesting ugly. But my least favorite Pokemon are any of the Pokemon that are just food.
Vanillish.
And so, because it doesn't make sense. Okay. Like, it doesn't make sense. If this Pokemon wants to survive, it should not look like food.
Unless it's like someone was saying on YouTube online or short, like, what it would be the reason for it to look like food, and like the idea is like it's a parasite of some kind.
Yeah, either parasitic or ambush predator type thing.
Maybe, I guess. But like that doesn't say Vanillish to me.
No. What is your stance on Cherim?
It's not my favorite. It's like
the ones that look like
adjacent.
The ones that look like fruit get more of a pass because fruit actually exists as a natural thing.
Like Applin is okay.
I say
Because like that's more normal. But like looking like an artificial food like. Ice cream or yogurt.
Yeah.
Here's a weird. Just
like even so, I'm on the verge of not liking like Sinistea.
Oh.
For the same reason. Like I can accept it. I can accept it because it does branch into a slightly different category for me.
Poltergeist and Sinistea look cooler anyways. But
it's close. It's close. Yeah. Like, it just, like, I don't like the Pokemon that are food.
As I was thinking through is Lovedisc and Alomomola. The weird thing for both of them is if they were an evolutionary line, I still wouldn't like them terribly much, but I like them slightly better. But instead, it's two strange heart-shaped fish that I have never heard anyone be interested in.
But heart scales and regenerator.
Yeah, the heart scales people like, but not the heart fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No.
And I think that they actually probably should have, like, I bet Alolan, if you think about the way that they did past evolutions in Generation 4, like, bigger, fatter version of this Pokemon, Alola Mola fits that to the T. But
absolutely.
For whatever reason, they got pushed to Gen 5, and Gen 5, they're like, hey, clean break, we're not going to have anything that is, that ties to anything else previously. Completely separate, nothing else ties in. So I think that's what happened in that situation.
One specific line that just came to mind was Gotharita's and all of its, like, evolutions.
I didn't see that.
Because I hate how they look. They look so terrible. It's just ugly. But, like, the only reason why I ended up catching that Gotharita was because of the Pokédex sounding so cool and just having fun in that episode. But otherwise, they're ugly. I don't like them. Or, like, the one we were just talking about with the diaper, the skull diaper. Was that
Vullaby.
One called?
Oh, Vullaby.
Vullaby. It's dumb. I don't like it.
I feel like...
Like, I have similar feelings where, like, in theory, I don't like a Pokemon or I do like a Pokemon. But, like, once I encounter it in-game...
In practice, there's more to it.
Like, it rises by to an exponential degree that, like, now I love this Pokemon.
Here's just like a quick aside. Here's a really weird one that I don't personally dislike, but I've read someone who... They articulated their rage and disgust towards this Pokemon so well that I can't... disagree with them too strongly, and that is this is a controversial one for it, but that is Lucario.
Sure.
The reason why look at a picture of Lucario. Where is its mouth?
What do you mean by this?
It's kind of like underneath the long snout.
It's a dog.
Yeah.
Why is its mouth not its snout? Why is it literally wearing an animal costume?
But you can say that about, like, a lot of other Pokemon, too, where it's like, anatomically, this does not make sense.
This person has 10 things I don't like about Lucario's. I'm looking at this here, like, so, first the stripes. Those perfectly straight, rigidly angular back stripes on Lucario's face do not look good at all, wrapped around a roughly globular head, and they don't really match the jagged black ends of its paws, nor the black belt stripe, nor the weird black donuts on its shoulders. None of the markings feel like they sync up to them. That's a problem with a lot of Pokemon, but it's especially awkward here. The hair. Lucario is apparently supposed to have dreadlocks. Is that what those are? Because they don't look like that. They look like fat, smooth, solid plastic teardrops nailed to the back of its skull at a weird angle, and they don't really complement the rest of the design in any way. Whatever flow this outline could have had is only ground to a halt by those cumbersome bulbs, which would look better with a different shape than if they even have to be there. Number three, the tail. Not an appealing shape. Bent facial silver practice. Number four was the big one, the mouth. It just has a mouth underneath there. The number five is the stands. Doesn't like the stands for them there. Number six, kind of a waste of a humanoid jackal. They point out that this is a humanoid jackal, which is connecting to Anubis, the Egyptian god of death. Nothing connected to Anubis, it's Anubis, sorry. Nothing connected to Anubis in its style, in its makeup, in anything else. So they just used up a humanoid jackal on Lucario. Number seven, the useless spikes. Just like those weird spikes on the back. Those aren't useful for battle or anything. Number eight, number eight, the jorts. Doesn't really bother them that badly, but they thought they'd point them out. Number nine, the insistence upon it. Didn't like that it just showed up. And then number 10, the disproportionate popularity of an anthropomorphic dog. And that's just kind of their personal gripes.
Sure.
But it's just like, they were so very good at, like, pointing out how much they dislike this thing that I'm like, I don't have any beef against this design. But the more you point it out, the more it's like, this is... Yeah, it's a little strange.
And yet it's one of the, like, almost pseudo-mascot. It's like a generational mascot, so.
And that was kind of the point, like, is it a mascot because it was popular, or is it popular because it was pushed as a mascot?
I think it's the latter of those two.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of like the... Which makes it a little strange, and that's kind of the hype backlash thing, but meh.
Lydia, I will tell you, of the three of the Gothita line, like, I feel like Gotharita is the best designed out of the three, but they kind of stink. Yeah. And I think I have settled on...
It just gets worse.
Yeah. Well, I'd say the middle stage is the best. I don't like the baby one. The baby one's awful.
Very but, weird yeah. thing, but Gothitelle, the third type, mm-hmm. there's one point where you see one of them, like, knocked to the ground, and that's when you realize it has the tiniest legs.
Yep.
And so that entire mm-hmm. thing is body, and then it has very tiny legs underneath.
Yeah. I think I have, at least for the time being, settled on my least favorite, and it's Electric, the middle stage of the Tynamo line. Electros, I like. Electros, I think, is cool. Mm-hmm. It's got some good versatility. It's one of the only Pokemon that does not have any weaknesses at all. But, like, Electric is just weird and awkward, and it's
a ugly.
It's, yeah, all the, it's just all the bad things. So, that I think that's the one that's settling for me as the my least favorite.
So, mm-hmm. I have a proposition. We've done the Pokemon Picker a couple of times. We need to do the anti-Pokemon Picker. And have our lineup of our six least favorite ones that were just I hate this team the most.
Wouldn't that
be fun?
So fun.
Oh, man. That sounds like a delightful activity.
I'd say, if the Pokemon Picker didn't take so long, it'd be like, okay, and this is just a really goofy one if we had the time for it, if we all had the same games and everything and had modding stuff for it. It's like, okay, you get your 20 or 30 least favorite, everyone swap them around, you have to do a Nuzlocke with those Pokemon.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, no. Oh, we should do a Nuzlocke sometime as a cast. That might be fun.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm with you, Paul.
And so is Michael.
I like your ideas.
Sure.
All right. Well, some people that do Nuzlocke, they say that's the moment that define for them their favorite Pokemon moment, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Just like question number two from Mr. or Mrs. Cabal Commander. What moment during your time playing and knowing Pokemon sticks out to you the most that defines the feelings you have towards the game?
So I have a specific moment. I don't know if this is the defining thing, but it is something that sticks out in my brain. Back when I got Blue Version, right, first Pokemon game that I ever had, and Nick, our cousin Tom, mm-hmm. had a Blue Version as well.
That sounds right.
And I believe he traded to. I can't remember the exact specifics, if he traded it to me or what, but the final evolutions of the first of the starters, all level 50.
Sounds and right.
So it's kind of a danger situation, right?
You can't
control them, too. You've got these Pokemon that you can't control. And so just like encountering that and being so frustrated by the fact that my Charizard would just fall asleep in the middle of a battle. what are you doing? But like what that did was like these little computer images have a personality, right? Like they have personalities, and like it's not the defining moment, but it does stick out to me as one of those things that created this feeling of like this isn't just a data point. And so like I always had a bit of trepidation about like doing the hard restarts and things, like just, you know, turning it off to fix it, because it's like I'm killing these things that are actually right. like they have personalities. I can't do that. You know.
Yeah, that was like near the same time I got Yellow Version, and I didn't get all of them. I had it was a level 49 Charizard and a level 67 Blastoise that was given to me. I remember for it. And so Charizard was the one I was using more often because it was lower level, which meant it was a slightly easier to control, at least in my mind. I don't know if that actually is how it works, but that's what it was. Until I got to level 70, they'll obey me. So I got to there, and I don't remember most of my play of that, but I remember that when I beat Giovanni, the 8th gym, in Yellow Version, the last Pokemon that I beat with Blastoise leveled it up to 71. And then I got the badge that made all Pokemon obey me up to level 100. And it was like, ha, nice. Perfect. So nice. You waited to level up, and then we got through this. And it was like, oh, that's great. Which is very well put together. But
That was good.
For me, I'm trying to think about, like, my time playing these games, and I can think about kind of, like, three moments. There was, like, the initial time the games came out, and, like, me and my buddy Alex, like, he had a Game Boy. I didn't have a Game Boy of any kind at that time, and he's like, yeah, you should get this game. Like, there's this version, and you can get the other version, and we can trade with each other. I'm like, yeah, okay, that sounds cool. And then, I don't think that was a specific moment necessarily. Then I remember, like, what really got me back into Pokemon was actually shortly after Elizabeth and I got married. Like, it was around Gen 4 came out. I was like, yeah, I want to keep playing Pokemon and doing this. Like, I played, like, Gen 3 throughout college and stuff, and but I got a DS and Pokemon Diamond, and I got really into it, and that's kind of, like, what locked me in as a Pokemon fan, I feel, is, like, playing then for some reason. But the moment that reaches out to me, and I think this is why I think back on these games so fondly, is back in Generation 6, when X and Y came out, I was working at Best Buy, and, like, a whole bunch of people at Best Buy, like, we were talking about, okay, so which version are you getting? Are you going to get X or Y? Do you like Yveltal or Xerneas? Do you like the Charizard X or Charizard Y? Do you like the Mewtwo X or Mewtwo Y? Like, all the reasons of why you'd get one version over another. And we even had, like, a community Facebook group on it, and just, like, being able, like, the first time I was, like, playing with several other people was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah,
something
that's cool.
More recent that kind of, like, defined it or made, like, redeemed it a bit. This is kind of a weird one, but playing Scarlet and Violet, playing through that, like, I didn't hit some of the terrible, terrible bugs that other people did, but I played it early enough that the frame rate was ridiculous, things were very slow, things were very strange, yeah, and it still is for it, and so it's like, I'm interested in enough things, and there's just enough interesting going on that's keeping me going, but there's definitely a feeling of, like, okay, this feels so much more low stakes and weird than all of the other games. Like, I think I had just before playing Scarlet and Violet, I had just gone back and replayed, I think, Pokemon White, which is... That game ends. You don't beat the champion in that game. After you beat the Elite Four, the enemy team destroys the Elite Four headquarters, and you have to fight through a gauntlet of them to get to the end of the game. And they're trying to take over. They're taking everyone's Pokemon away from them, doing all these things. It's like, and then you go to Scarlet, where you're going on a field trip. And it's just like, this is so small. And then you get to the end game of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which felt like an entirely different writer, like, woke up and went, oh wait, there's a world-ending cataclysm, all of these things are happening, let's bring in a tragic backstory, discussions about what it means to be human, or what it means to be a sentient being with this android version of something that has taken over but has been a much better parent to a character than their own parent was, and then is getting overridden and realizes they're getting overridden, and so urges you to beat them even though knowing that will destroy their own existence. And it's just like, where did this come from? And why wasn't this foreshadowed in the rest of this game? Mm. Because I think... the complaints about all of the other things in the game would be so much smaller if it felt like what you were doing in Scarlet and Violet mattered. Because so much of that game is none of this matters, so you're doing it purely on whether or not you enjoy it. And that's true for all games, but they're part of the enjoyment of something is whether or not it matters. And with Scarlet and Violet, it's just like, your character could disappear from the face of the earth and no one would notice very much in Scarlet and Violet until the end game. It was just interesting of, like, this hints at what Pokemon can tell stories about, and I wish they did, but...
Right.
Lydia, what's your favorite moment that defined Pokemon?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Watts. I feel like it's hard to pin down because I'll be honest. I think there's only been two of like the main games that I've actually played through from start to finish. And
fake fan.
I honestly kind of I'm sorry.
No. I'm kidding.
I'm like, I honestly kind of feel like I don't I will fix that later. I honestly kind of feel like I enjoyed more of the offshoot stuff more than I do the actual games, just because of kind of the thing that you were talking about, Paul, where you got to interact with other people and like actually other people in real life and stuff. And so like playing games with siblings and playing games with friends and things like that, and hearing other people get excited, and then I would get excited from seeing the passion that they have. And then especially too with doing this whole podcast and stuff too, that like that really ignited a spark for interest and passion for this, you know, whole thing for me too, that I hadn't had for a really long time. And so like it's been fun getting to connect again with other people on it and getting to hear about everybody else's enjoyment of it and seeing how it's all changed and whatnot through the years, and now like getting to change with it too. So I think that's been my most defining thing, is just the community.
Community is great.
Like this podcast.
Like this podcast. From viewers like you.
From viewers like you. Listeners that send like you. So many questions. Like our next question that we have in mind. That comes from our friend Pixel Pluto. How do you prepare the world characters' settings as they seem really well crafted? Well, thank you, Pixel.
Alright, Nick, go for it.
For the world, the world and settings and things, a lot of it is deciding on theming and then making interesting things happen within the theme. If you make the theme the entire thing, if like you kind of nailed over the head, and I'm sure I've done that a few times, it can get kind of tiring. But if you don't have a theme at all, things can start to feel disjointed, and you can feel like you're not sure what you're doing. So. Especially one of the things I did when I knew I was going to bring in the archetypes to play, I was like, okay, why don't I theme the areas to some extent around the archetypes? I haven't done that perfectly, especially as we've gotten later in, but in a lot of the earlier things, it's like slumber and knowledge. So in the first area with the first gym, a lot of things are a lot quieter. They're working with a few things, but they're gaining information. Then it's fiction and solitude was Trilithon Sanctuary. So it's a lot more mystical. There's a lot more loneliness. There's a lot more essence of mystery that's not being explained, but that's just kind of there. Yash was creation and bliss. It kind of loses it a little bit, but it's still kind of this idea of unchecked creation of, oh, I'm really interested in this, so I'm going to dive into this without really thinking of the consequences. I'm more focused on that. Then there was the dragon and fighting is suffering and freedom. So the stakes are getting ramped up, but you're also getting less bound by other things and other conventions. They're more breaking through different things. They're getting more into the area, but they're also fighting a lot tougher things.
Can I pause you for a moment, Nick?
Yes.
I will say that I loved the dichotomy you had between Professor Linnaeus and Yash, of like two sides of like these people using their skills, their professional skills, to augment Pokemon for their better, but both having two different ways of doing it. And we saw how our characters approached that. Charlie didn't see any difference between the two. He thought they were both the same. But as a person, Paul appreciates that, you know, they, you know, one was doing it from a more, you know, I want to help this Pokemon to repair them and recover them, versus the one, I want this to be the superior typing, so I'm going to effectively poison it to make it happen.
Yeah, it's a very different stuff. That was also kind of, at that point, I was also leaning into, you'd had several interactions with the Flames of Agni. It was very obvious they were antagonistic. But the futurists weren't really present as anything more than just existing.
in the area, or you've heard of them. So having an interaction with one of them that was memorable was important to me, because it's like both of these things are threats, and so it's important to notice. Trying to remember the bug. Oh, it was Fact, Rebellion, and Inconsequence. That was an interesting mixture at Landsmeet, and how it kind of ended up being was. I'm realizing now what it kind of ended up being, and what I worked with it is nothing. There wasn't much you did at Landsmeet that affected the general outcome of you leaving Landsmeet. Things were kind of put in motion around you that were causing that kind of caused issues, and so you were dealing with those things, but you couldn't really change the outcome. At the end of the day, you were going to be on the run. And so that was just going to happen, and now we're moving towards other directions. So that's a lot of the things with the characters. The other thing, like when dealing with different Pokemon, just a very quick one for it, is reading the Pokedex entry and then extrapolating that into something interesting. Like that is how I ended up with, this is a quick aside, but one of the characters, or the Pokemon that I... that has become one of the more interesting ones to me, simply because how I wrote it and didn't realize that it would become this interesting, was Cincino, or the Cincino. Just because, like, reading through it of how to get these things to work is that, like, there's nothing much from it except that it has an oil secret from his body that can slide away from enemy attacks, and then it won't tolerate even a speck of dust around it or in its living space or on it. And I was also trying to figure out, like, a Ravager Pokemon that would be interesting, and so getting those two, I was like, how do I make this into a legitimate threat? And it having one, it having, I think it's Tail Slap or whatever it was that attacked twice. Yes, Tail Slap. Its signature move, essentially, like literally was a signature move that allowed it to attack twice and basically just one shot one of your Pokemon, or got very close to one shotting one of your Pokemon. Was like, oh, this tiny fluffy chinchilla is now a legitimate threat, and that's very interesting to me. As, like, this thing just popped out of nowhere and is scary.
So but what it probably is no, guessing that, I'm guessing Tail Slap actually has the five strike effect. I'm guessing
five strike.
And then has a skill link, which means that it always does the max amount of strikes. Which, I mean, in any game, makes those kinds of Pokemon terrifying.
Right, but no, like, I remember that moment when, like, oh yeah, it's just this fluffy little thing, and then, oh, okay, no, this is serious, okay.
Yeah, and so, like, a lot of it is looking at, there's a Pokemon habitat list at the back of the core rule book, looking through there and going, okay, what's an interesting typing, either a typing they haven't seen before, or a typing that might be interesting for them to run into, or a Pokemon or typing that they're interested in. Okay, what are the stories behind that? How do I craft a small story related to that? The very first thing that they ran into, or one of the very first ones that they ran into, and kind of what was I introduced as and kind of worked as a good, like, hey, let's remember we're not playing a video game sort of moment for all of you, was the fact that Nidoran Male, I believe in their Pokedex entry, say that they love to play tag, but that gets them in trouble because they have poison points, so they accidentally poison people with it. And so literally I had you guys run into Nidoran Male and Nidoran Female playing while a Nidoqueen is sleeping nearby. One of them run up to play tag and poison one of you. Because I knew... it was you. And because I knew your guys' response, since you had played the video games, was, we just got attacked by a wild Pokemon. We have to fight back.
We have to fight it and catch it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so it was just like the moment of, oh, wait, no, we're not... The battle screen didn't just suddenly appear. We're on a field with a bunch of babies and their mother taking a nap while watching them.
So that steal one.
And then you stole one and ran away.
Yep.
Good times. No consequences.
What do you guys think? Should we do one more or do we want to cut it here? Because, again, around 10:30 will be an hour for us.
Oh, I talked quite a bit. Oh. The next one is pointed at the players, not me, so maybe you should do one more.
Okay. And on okay. Harshman's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do that.
All right. Which one?
This one up here.
Okay. Not the one crossed out, right?
No. You can't even read that one.
Okay. Edit this part. Okay, cut. All right, we're back.
Well, thank you so much for that insight. I'm pretty sure all the listeners will appreciate that. And maybe, who knows, they can start their own adventures with the tips that you just gave them. So that's very nice. Well, looks like we have our last question for the evening. And it's coming from The Harshman. The question is, as players, what Pokemon of your fellow players, not your own Pokemon, do you enjoy interacting with or just enjoy watching most?
Sparky.
I would say Sparky,
Sparky!
Yeah.
I love Sparky.
I wasn't even on the episode when Sparky like came into existence, so like I didn't have a chance to get him.
Yeah.
Sucka!
That isn't the entire reason, but that's part of the reason why he exists as he does, because I knew if Charlie was there, it would be Charlie's Pokemon, so I was like, let's put it somewhere else and see who gets it. But...
Give them the ultra, Paul. Now, Nick, can you tell us the story of how Sparky was created again? Because it was Dice Roll,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I was still trying to do random Pokemon Dice Rolls. I've given that up because it's tough to put together too quickly. It's much easier to kind of craft it and work with it. But I was doing that, so I had rolled, and I was rolling, at that point I was rolling D100s to see if a shiny would show up. And if I remember, I rolled a 100 and got a shiny. So I'm like, okay, shinies are interesting. Let's see what I can do with it. I didn't just want to make it a recolor. And so I was looking through. It's been so long at this point that I don't remember the exact steps that I ended up with. But I was like, I don't just want to do a recolor. What's something interesting that I can do? I think I did remember that Charlie wasn't going to be there. So I'm like, okay, let's make something for Liliana or Professor Sneeze. Professor Sneeze isn't really interested in catching Pokemon at this point. He was still kind of hesitant, even though Michael was catching them. Professor Sneeze wasn't, so I'm like, okay, maybe I'll trend it a little towards Liliana. Dark-type might be interested. Okay, again, this is me retroactively remembering it, but it's like, okay, I'm leaning edgy already. Let's just lean fully into edgy. So it's like, okay, instead of scythes, it's the bone things with lightning going through. And when it goes through, it's got lightning bursting out of it and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, let's just do the full thing. But
yeah, that was good. Like, also, Sparky is the other one. It's like what a well-designed Pokemon. And like, I don't know, if they ever do come out with an electric dark scyther, we know that they're listening because it's not the first time they've stolen one of your ideas.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Well, and I love a lot of the fan art too that came from that as well, and seeing everybody's interpretations is really, really cool.
What was your favorite?
That and the Yarmahaha art has been some of my favorite.
The other one I like interacting with is, I like Grunge, and I think everyone loves Detective Grunge.
Grunge. Detective Grunge is so good.
Which I need to sit down and like actually write another thing for him. Mm-hmm. So
those are fun. Yeah. Those are fun.
Yeah, those are fun episodes. Yeah. I also really love Ruse a lot.
Mm.
Ruse is
you can't
fun
pick
little
one
trickster.
Of your own. You can't pick your own.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Ruse sucks. Forget I even mentioned her. No, in that case, then, okay, so I really like Boss because, come on, Boss is Boss. Mm-hmm. And there's just been so many just over-the-top ridiculous things that have happened with that Pokemon. And I also really love Katana because she's, like, kind of this, like, little stinker, too. But she's very, like, quiet and nonchalant about it. And so I love her personality as well.
Are you guys taking more questions or the ones that are out there already?
Keep them coming.
We're fine with having them out until we have the thing, I think.
Well, there you go, gentle listeners. We got many questions asked and many answers given. Thank you so much for all your input. And it was mentioned already in the beginning of the episode, there's going to be a longer episode where even more questions are going to be asked. So please keep them coming on the Discord, you know, the usual channels, Twitter, YouTube, the other place.
No, it's
well, cut
not,
that.
It's...
Cut that.
You can find us on... Wait, let me get it pulled up.
No,
here
but
we go.
You're interrupting my outro.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, you already okay. cut yourself.
Yeah, I cut myself. Where? Okay. Okay. Well, now you'll find when the best part to edit that out. You can find us online at tapestryradio.org/Pokemon rollout on X at Pokemon. No, sorry. On X at Poke Roll Podcast and on Facebook, facebook.com/PokeRollout. Join our Facebook group, the Pokemon Rollout Tap Room. As long as you're not a robot, we'll approve your request to join. That sounds very familiar, I bet. There you can join the conversation with creators and fans and become a part of the Pokemon Rollout community. Also, follow our networks on X at Tapestry Radio and check out some of our other great shows at tapestryradio.org, like Intermission, Michael and Ethan in a Room with Scotch, Freddy Goes to a Podcast, and Us Play Fiasco. A special thank you to Rocco W for our theme music. Why is it theme music and not theme song? Okay, thank you to Rock W for our theme music, Electric Donkey Muscles, and feel free to check the show notes for the other music and sound effects used in this episode. Once again, I am not Nick, I'm Watts, and you can follow me on nothing.
Nice.
In Costco.
but you can follow Nick though on
we can do our own outro.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's me. That was me. That was Watts. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for
yelling into it. Just speak at a normal volume.
You're good.
Cut that.
All right.
Well, thank you so much for having me again. Yeah. My name is Watts. I'm a character from the void.
Nice.
I don't have a shape, or I only have a voice. So yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed the opportunity, and we'll see you around, people. Ooh. Take care.
When is our Spanish episode coming out?
Someday.
Cuando
mañana.
Está el.
It'll be a 1-man episode.
Episode.
Yo tengo tres años de español en la escuela.
What was that?
Yo tengo tres años de español en la escuela.
Oh, nice.
No hablo español.
Nice.
J'ai étudié la français.
Tú tienes pantalones de queso en su cebolla.
Wow. That doesn't make any sense, but thanks. Especially because I'm just a voice. I don't have an entity.
Okay.
Exactly.
He's got you there.
Nick, where can people All find right. you?
Technically on X or Twitter at PokeRollNick. I don't think I've posted there in years.
For me, I am also technically on X, but you can find me in the Discord. Come to our Discord and say hi there and ask more questions there.
Yeah, same here. I'm on Discord. I'm on X at MGLILIENTHAL. Or you can find me on Substack. I've gotten a little more active on that platform at Good Pilgrim. So you can find me there.
Ooh. And I'm Lydia, and I don't have a place where you can follow me, but you can come on our Instagram at Pokemon Rollout. What about Eilie? Oh. Did Eilie send Watts from the void?
You can follow me on Twitter, Rick, at Behind Your Eilie. That's Behind Your E-Y-E-L-I.
Obscurantism and obfuscation.
Orally observed, gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Obviated objects of oblivion.
Obambulating about.
Offered unto
offered
you.
Offered unto you.
Offered unto you.
In the Tapestry Radio Network.
TapestryRadio.org.
From our fancy to yours.